A lot of my work is really embracing how messy life is, and that instead of pursuing clarity, what if we really accept the messiness? And actually, for me and for my clients, that has felt much more human and much more like, what if we work with what is? That actually our process is not linear, and really sit with that very human, very real messiness in the moment.
Welcome to the Healthy Love and Money podcast. If you find money to be the number one, two, or even third largest source of stress in your relationship, then you're in the right place. Going beyond how to budget, invest, and do your taxes, we're going to explore financial intimacy. Discover how to talk with your partner about your shared financial life. Let's take the awkward and painful out of money conversations. Join me and hit follow to listen to weekly inspiring, healing, and motivating interviews with financial therapists, couples therapists, and financial planners, and so many more. Let's go on the journey of financial intimacy together. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Healthy Love and Money podcast. Today is my distinct honor to welcome Rachel Duncan to the show. Now, Rachel is a very unique and very special person who I just recently got to meet. She is an incredible therapist, and her specialties include addiction recovery, art therapy, and financial therapy. And now your head might be spinning as you hear that, really, wait, addiction therapy, art therapy, and financial therapy? How the heck do all those connect? Well, stay tuned, because Rachel is going to help us connect how all of these different approaches to therapy help us really become healthier, more alive and enjoyable people. So Rachel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ed. That's the best intro I've ever heard. Thank you so much.
Yes. Well, so I'm dying to know, how the heck did you get to this place in your life where you're doing this incredible combination of all this work?
Gosh, you know, there's this, I think it's a Zen story about, you know, the monk that is walking this road and it's so windy and filled with peril and he doesn't know where he's going. And he finally gets to the top of the mountain or whatever. And he looks behind him and the path is straight. And I think about that a lot. Like, I just feel like I have stumbled and been lost. I'm like, that's interesting. And I've sort of followed the sparkly thing. And just in the last couple of years, really since saying I'm a financial therapist, I look into my past and it was a straight line here. But the process was so murky. If that metaphor kind of makes sense to you.
It does make sense. And I appreciate you saying it and having the space to just kind of sit with that, because it is like, as we're going forward, it feels like we're zigzagging back and forth, but then it's in reflection, we can see the straight line to where, from where we were to where we're at. That feels very true for me. And I imagine other people that have been on their own journeys can recognize that, like, oh, when I turn back and look, I can see the line through it all, but trying to make my way forward, I had no idea fully what I was headed towards.
Right. Because I mean, still going forward, the path feels super windy. I mean, I don't know. I haven't met a person that's like, it is clear sailing, like my goals and how I'm going to get there. You know, and I think some of like the coaching and stuff in the world is like, oh, you know, set these goals and really pursue them. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but I think a lot of my work is really embracing how messy life is, and that instead of pursuing clarity, what if we really accept the messiness? And actually, for me and for my clients, that has felt much more human and much more like, what if we work with what is? That actually our process is not linear, and really sit with that very human, very real messiness in the moment.
Now, I have to say, you're really provoking the recovering financial planner and business person in me, because I love a good strategic plan and a roadmap that says, hey, this in 6 months, this in a year, this in 3 years, this in 5 years, and this in 20 years. And voila, we're going to have a wonderful retirement account. Like, I love all that. But you're saying that, like, that has its own problems.
Well, I'm curious with how many of your clients did that happen on those goalposts and that in that timeline?
Oh, you know, 100% of them. Shaking my head no. Listeners cannot see me shaking my head.
Shaking his head no.
He is definitely shaking his head no. So, all right. So, do you mind sharing kind of a personal anecdote or connection to why this work has shown up in your life?
I identify as an elder millennial, and I was definitely raised to like be, I'm putting air quotes, be well-rounded.
Oh, uh-huh.
And so I think that's also why like my interests are really kind of seem really disparate. Like I was always really strong with like math and science growing up. And then I go to college and I take one like religion class and it blew my hair back and I became a religion major. Then I leave college and I'm wandering the world kind of, felt very lost. I very much like being in school, by the way. Like I really struggle not having structure. And like a lot of, I think, millennials do that, like, well, where is my camps and where's my programs and how do I get the A? And so then once I wasn't like getting the A's anymore, I did really struggle. But having really strong skills on like both sides of my brain, having strong analytical skills, as well as very strong creative skills and like the humanities. And when I left college, I'm like really good at admin. I'm just super good at admin. Like I've always had a comfort with sort of like the mundane stuff. As a kid, I loved like sorting money and sorting my shell collection. And like, I was always just very analytical, but at the same time, I loved music and art. And for me, it's like, I think from the outside, those seem like really different things, but for me, it all feels like one. Like, I don't know, they're just things I do. They're things I love. And I think both of those strengths inform the other. Like I was just telling my son the other day about like I'm teaching him how to read music and how there's so much math in music. And he didn't know that, you know? And so and I love that. That all just like illuminates for me the math and things and also the art and things. Basically, every job I've ever had, except 1 month where I waited tables, but every other job I've ever had, I've ended up running the books. Without training, without like, I just have a lot of comfort for numbers. I don't find numbers intimidating. I don't find money intimidating. And honestly, like, I don't know. I'm like a little bit woo-woo. I'm like not totally woo-woo, but there is something that I was kind of born with because my parents were not comfortable with money. Like we struggled with money and all of that. I mean, my dad would have me like sit down and help him like add up the columns for taxes. So in some ways he probably had the most capacity for this stuff and would include me in it. But certainly wasn't direct or heavy-handed. I just like have always had an interest and a capacity for understanding money and numbers. And it's just like, oh no, I just can do it. And so through my 20s, having admin jobs, which is like, I never not had a job. Like they would always land in my lap. It's like, run my office. And I'm like, I feel like I should do more with my life because I went to these schools that told me I had to leave and go change the world. I'm like, well, how do I afford that? How can I change the world when?
Yeah,
when I have no family money. And I think I went to a school that had a lot of trustafarians, we would call them. But you could go for help people in Mongolia for a year or save the rivers or whatever. Because like you had family support. I had zero family support. So, and also like, I'm kind of risk averse too. Like that's just not quite my personality. And so there I was sort of like doing this assistive work, you know, and doing the books and the admin and all that stuff, which were my strengths. And I was able to support myself, right? And that was super important to me because one thing my dad always taught me, my dad hated debt, just hated debt. And he was quite a bit older when I was born. He'd be more of like from the silent generation. And so like he grew up in the Depression. So very, you know, kind of wary of banking institutions, like no debt. So that was probably like one of the only, you know, I'd say helpful money things that I received from him is like really avoid credit cards. He told me when I went to college, like, if you get those in the mail, you put them straight in the trash. Like I only had debit card all through college. So like that was a helpful thing looking back.
Sure.
But so it's like, okay, so I wasn't in debt, but I also had a kind of low paying job. So I just kind of kept breaking even. Guess what? Just like my parents, right? Absolutely the money map. Be self-reliant. Don't become wealthy, but don't get in debt. And take care of yourself. And that's about it.
Upper limit, lower limit. Make enough to take care of yourself, but not so much that you're becoming wealthy.
Yep. And right, that feels comfortable to me. That's how I grew up. That's their culture of money.
Sure.
And so as I pushed up into like my later 20s, and I really helped, I was working for a small business, really helped it grow, like tripled our staff and our projects. And I like really became the business manager. I kind of started as an admin and I really was like running the show.
Yeah.
And I think I felt just also a little more confident in my skills, as well as feeling I need more, I need something more professional. I will continue to be assisting people the rest of my life.
Sure.
And I've been like a lifer with therapy. I've just always loved being in therapy myself. And I started just fielding that out. Like, what if I became a therapist? Again, like people are like, what the heck, Rachel? Like, you're a bookkeeper, you're a therapist, you sing in a band, but you love bookkeeping. Like, what is it? I'm like, ah. It doesn't feel confusing to me, guys.
It feels totally right inside of me. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always liked doing a lot of different things. Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible.
So that takes us up to going to grad school. And that also, I was like, I don't know. I want to get into counseling psychology and I don't really know much more. So I talked to people, fielded it out. At the time, my husband and I moved to, well, then boyfriend, now husband, moved to Seattle. And I just started looking at programs. And I saw that Antioch University had an art therapy program. And I'd heard really good things about their counseling program in general.
Sure.
And I was like, I love art. I make art. And I really luckily got in. It's like a very competitive program. It was truly like that. Like, I like art, let's try. And I got accepted. Like, okay, I guess I'm being an art therapist. Like, it wasn't necessarily like a thing I had been pining for.
Yeah. And when it wasn't like, oh, I have this deep appreciation for art therapy and how much it's helped me. It's more like, no, I just like art. Like, that's cool. You can use it for therapy.
I was walking in front of the university and some of the art therapy students were like doing chalk art. And I was like, oh, what's this? And they told me about it. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll apply. It was literally that.
Going back to my like, just were like, no, we got to make a master plan here, Rachel. Like, we can't just live in the moment and the messiness. And yet that is how most of my life has gone, is more of the mess than the plan. But I mean, it's like, you couldn't have planned out like, oh, 3 years from now, I'm going to walk in front of this school and see this group of students doing this thing that's going to then set the stage for where I go.
Exactly. And that's very much my way.
So as you've gotten this education, I'm fast forwarding you a little bit here because I really am interested in the process of art therapy, how you use it to help people with their relationship with money, and what you're discovering about both yourself, but also about clients.
Yeah. Oh, it's been, ever since I've combined these two things, like the world has opened up to me. Like, I feel like my work has deepened and actually I have clarity for kind of the first time. It's like the least murky I have felt is bringing these things together, because, you know, with the pandemic and I closed my private practice, I was doing just, you know, straight up art therapy.
Yeah.
And had to close everything, taking care of kids, things like that. And it was right in that time, like, I think there was some like maybe New York Times articles about financial therapy.
Yeah.
And people said like, I think this is you. And I was like, oh, this is exciting. But I still kind of thought they had to be separate camps. I actually thought I had to say like goodbye to art therapy. I was like, oh, that's this is financial therapy, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of put the art therapy on hold as I did the training for financial therapy. And then as I started sitting with clients, and of course, like, it's just such a strong muscle. It's literally my training is to integrate the art making and everything.
Yeah.
And yes, we do a lot of talk therapy in art therapy, by the way, like it's still like a lot of talking, but it's using image making and sometimes just reflecting on an image, not always making an image, but like if I'm sitting with a client, I might bring up some like calendar images, like photographs, you know, choose an animal that reflects how you're feeling today.
Oh.
And I'm just so used to doing that. And it softens things and it opens up the right side of our brain, which thinks intuitively and in images. As I was like, well, I can't not do that. Like, it's literally how I am trained to do clinical work.
Yeah.
And then with the clients that were kind of up for it, because it's like, well, I know they didn't sign up with me to do art therapy because I didn't tell them that. But like, oh, by the way, you know, I'm also a trained art therapist. when you talk about the part of you that is putting things in the Target shopping cart, that small part of you, could you make an image of that part of you for me? Oh, sure. And it just started like, whoa, the work started deepening, like big time, when I actually was just bringing in how I was trained. And so what I've been finding, sorry, this is like a windy answer to your question. So when I bring in very careful image making, and I will say it's not necessarily every session, it's when it feels right. And I have like a good instinct on that. It starts to deepen the process again, because we're like working on the image generating and very instinctive parts of our brain. Clients are sometimes surprised how easily they access this process. And then, you know, we're using these tools of, you know, like in talk therapy, hey, we're like putting words to things maybe you haven't put words to before.
Right.
Their experiences we can't even put words to. So when a client makes an image, it's like there's a third person in the room now.
This is all kind of coalescing for me. So as people are listening, it's like, what is one of the points of talk therapy is to be able to put language to your experience. And for many of us, myself included, like I've just shifted into receiving more somatic therapy recently. And I was joking with another therapist friend of mine. I was like, man, I spent all these years in talk therapy and really got good about talking about myself and naming my feelings and all stuff. And now like I go to therapy and I just lay there and the therapist does the somatic work. And I'm like, oh, this is different. So I guess what I want people to pick up on is like being able to express ourselves is part of the therapeutic process. And what you're highlighting is sometimes there's not the right word or combination of words to fully express what the experience is. And this is where imagery really helps communicate that experience. And in communicating that experience, that's where I'm using air quotes, the healing happens, the growth, the change happens. Is that, am I picking up on what you're getting at?
Totally.
Welcome to 2024, and thank you for listening to the Healthy Love and Money podcast. I'd like to take you behind the scenes of therapy-informed financial planning, where we talk about emotions, we talk about retirement plans, we talk about painful family experiences with money, and so much more. There's no need to hide things that leave you feeling embarrassed or ashamed about your financial situation. This year, we watch couples and individuals work through financial anxiety and start talking lovingly about money. We saw couples and individuals take action towards their goals, like closing a business that no longer fit them, paying off debt that felt crushing, increasing their comfort with their realized wealth, and ultimately overcoming some of those financial secrets that had been plaguing the relationship. Ultimately, the best part was seeing smiles return to our clients' faces about life, relationships, and money. This is why we do therapy-informed financial planning. I invite you to make 2024 the year you start therapy-informed financial planning. Check the show notes below to schedule your free 30-minute consultation.
And what's really cool about, or what's extra cool for me about the art therapy is like, okay, let's say I ask you to make an image and you make an image and that is part of the, that in itself is part of the process. And then Guess what? We start to work with the image. It's not like a one and done thing. Then what small shift could you make that would make this image better for this character, you know, whatever it is? What's one shift that would help this? Like, let's say someone makes an image that's really unsettling for them, really bothers them, and we explore that. Then what one change could you make to this image that would improve it for you? Oh, maybe it's I'm adding something on top of it, or you know what, it needs more red. And we start working instinctively, and then, oh, and then there's a lot of somatic work with art therapy because there's a lot of checking in on like your sensory reaction to the image that you made.
And just for people that are listening, can you,
how does that shift it for you?
For people that are listening that are not familiar, I've tried to be mindful about lingo, and somatic work may not always resonate for everyone that's listening. So when we talk about somatic work, in the simplest terms, what does that mean?
Well, I will say I'm not fully somatically trained, but when I think about somatic work, it's like, what physical sensations are you experiencing in this moment? And in the light of art therapy, when you're in front of this image, what sensations come up for you?
Sure.
And so it's not emotions, it's sensations, which is, I feel sticky. I feel hot. I feel cold. Like it's it's these very physical sensation words.
Yeah. You know, I think as trying to understand this stuff and wanting to communicate, this is so important in my mind for people as they're listening, is when I have tried to study emotion, the way I have it is like, we have affect, which is made up of emotion and sensation. Like, we have both of these things. And so, yeah, I think just trying to connecting all those pieces, understanding that as we're going through and having experiences, we have emotions, but we also have these physical sensations that happen in our body, and that becoming more aware of that helps us then understand what we're experiencing. And many of us don't know how to name any of those experiences. We just experience them.
Right.
We may not even be aware that we're experiencing them.
True. But when we're in this sort of therapeutic room, when you trust your therapist and you feel really safe, and the therapist asks, what's your physical experience? What's your physical reaction with this image?
Right.
And you can say, oh, I just feel hot. I feel like I need to get out of here. Right. It's usually, it's also really accessible. It's like, whoa, it is right there. Like, I couldn't not say it. It becomes very obvious and clear. And I think in some ways easier to describe than describe an emotion.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also drawing down from the cognitions or thoughts that we're having. Well, I'm just so angry at my mom I'm just so disappointed that, you know, and like having to describe all of it, it's like, oh, my body is physically hot. And that's connected to my mom doing or not doing something, my spouse doing or not doing something. And it just makes it.
And what helps, it brings it into the moment too. Like, we're not stuck in the past. We're also like, how is this impacting you now?
All right. So before we hit record, I asked you if we could do like a little demonstration, and I could bring you like one of my money issues, and you could like do a little demonstration of art therapy. Now, people are just going to be listening, so we'll have to describe some of what's going on. You're not going to see anything. But
well, actually, Ed, I have an idea, but I could lead you through something without you even telling me your idea, and we'll work with that.
Okay, sure. Let's give it a go.
Would that be okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
I've got one that has really been impactful for a lot of people. So, okay. So anyone listening, you can work along with Ed. Okay. So I want you to have any mark making.
If you're driving, maybe pull over and park or come back to the section, but otherwise take a moment to be here and be guided.
Exactly. And if you're driving, you're going to have active imagination anyway. So, okay. So get any mark making stuff. It can be a ballpoint pen and a sticky note. It could be that art kit that's getting dust in your closet. I work with a lot of creative people. They're like, oh yeah, I got a ton of art stuff. So just whatever is accessible. Don't get hung up on the art materials. But if you have a few things to add some color, that'd be great. Not a big deal. So again, this is about process more than product. And I'm going to ask you to work really instinctively and really listen to the first reaction that comes up from your mind's eye. And you may have some judgment about that, like, oh, that's weird. Oh, that doesn't make any sense. It might not make any sense, but it is worth listening to. Okay. So even if your idea seems strange, I really want to encourage you to go with it with curiosity and openness that this is actually a safe process. So also the other preparation is, I just want you to be really kind to yourself in the process, like as kind as you would be to a child trying to make some artwork. Okay. There is no right or wrong here. There's no right or wrong. Let's see. I always have one other rule. If the image comes out differently than you imagine, that's how it's supposed to go. It might be frustrating for you because a lot of us as adults have not drawn much. So be really kind to yourself that you might face some frustration, and that's great. That means you're doing it right. Okay. Okay. I want you to just take a breath, and I'm going to ask you, Ed, I want you to show, what is your money looking like as a creature? If your money were a creature, either real or fictitious, what first comes to mind?
So I need to capture the very first thing that came to mind.
If possible, did anything float to the surface for you?
Yes, it did. Yeah.
Okay. So Ed is working, and I hope listeners, even if you're driving, something might have come to the surface. I have never heard the same creature come up. It's like amazingly diverse. And there's always something right about it. Even I've done this exercise again and again, and a different creature comes up for me every time. So this is a really fun one to repeat. So take a minute, jot down this image of the creature. And if at any point you want to scratch it and start again, that's totally fine. And as you're working, you may also consider, what is this creature's sort of attitude, personality? What is its environment? Where does it live? And as you are putting pen to paper and this image starts to come, now you are working. I'm just going to kind of describe this process. I wouldn't normally talk like this while someone's working. I normally would give just quiet. But as you're working and this image starts to take shape, you are starting to react to this image as it starts appearing. Like, oh, well, that's not quite right. Or I need a little bit of this. You may even hear an internal dialogue coming up. Ooh, it needs a little this. Oh, that's not quite right. That's how my internal dialogue sounds. So go with that instinct. It may change as you're working on it from that initial idea. And that's great. Definitely go with that. Oh, this needs a little blue here. Oh, this needs to be a stronger line. All of that. Really work with that. Trust yourself and trust this process. And do not worry about any meaning making right now. That's not what it's about. We are making the implicit explicit by making an image of something that, in kind of a funny way, just feels right inside, even though you've probably never thought about this or described it to anybody. Ed, how is your image coming along?
It's coming along.
And I'm going a lot faster than I would in a session, by the way. I'd give quite a bit of time for this usually. I also do this in small groups, which is really fun.
And stay listening, because we have a special announcement for everyone at the end. Rachel has a very special group that she's going to share about. So just stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Get more of this.
We'll call it done for now, because we're doing this in a kind of a shortened, mall. But this. Shall I show you the image?
I would love it. You might have to describe it because it's a little blurry. But yeah, why don't you tell me?
All right. So, and listeners are not going to, obviously they won't be able to see it. But what I tried to draw, the very first animal that actually came up was a lion.
A lion?
A lion, yes. So this is my best attempt at a lion. And I have the mane around the lion, and the lion is kind of doing a roar. And then, like, you're just saying, like, where is the animal at, kind of thing. And I was thinking about the African savannah. And so this is like supposed to be the savannah, the grass of the savannah, and then a tree. And so, like, the lion is in a, I guess, in an activated state.
What do you mean by activated?
It's actively roaring. And so, like, as I'm describing to you this image, I think about more often. There's just these distinct images that come to my mind as I talk about it more, about like the roar of the lion. But there's also now like these images of like the lion being completely at ease and at rest under the shaded tree on the savannah, like not worried, not encumbered by anything. So that's not what I drew.
So you kind of feel a bit of duality. It sounds like in one sense, like at first, the lion is roaring, but there's also this sense that it could be just hanging out.
Yeah, I think so. Before I started drawing the images, you said, well, what was the first animal you thought about? And the lion, as best as I can remember, was the first. My brain started to flip through a couple, and I was like, landed at a possum.
Oh, a possum. Interesting. Yeah.
But I was like, okay, well, I'll go with the lion. And then as I drew the lion, especially the last part around the mane, there were some tears that were starting to come up. So I'm not sure what that says about my relationship with money, but yeah. Okay. So what next? Where do I go with this?
So I want to reflect, when we work with images, we often get emotional quick.
Yeah.
Okay. We tend to get to an emotional core in a different way and much like really fast, like often in our first or second session, we're getting pretty emotional. So I just want to acknowledge that there's something tender here. And I don't know what, We don't know what. Something tender here.
So because we're doing this live and partly as a podcast interview, I guess this is where like, that's where being in that kind of therapeutic relationship with you is there's more time to kind of process and expunge some of what is that about for me? What's going on there? Obviously, we won't have time to work through that in this interview.
Right. It could go in 5,000 directions, right? But this is very real. And I'm thank you for sharing that there was a real emotional reaction, because that's very common for folks. So as you look at this image now, Ed, anything surprise you about it? Does anything kind of sit with you about this image?
You know, as I look at the image, it looks kind of dinosaur-like a little bit too. But I think there's also, if I sit with it, there's maybe some pride that's also coming up. Like, you know, I wonder if there's almost some acceptance that like I can be lion-like, which as I say that feels very incongruent with how I see myself. You know, I think I would, if I had an animal, my spirit animal would be a golden retriever. So like, you know, a lion and a golden retriever are not exactly the same critters.
Right. So here's some new information. Some new information is coming up that maybe some old ways of looking at ourselves might need to get shook up a little bit. And we have some other information coming from the subconscious for you to listen to.
Well, I think that feels really right. And I think, you know, as I'm working on my own identity for so much, I've been told who I am, right? Through different assessments. Like I think about, I don't know if it was the DISC assessment or something else. There's somewhere where it was like they use four animals to describe your personality, and that was asked, and it's like, golden retriever. You know, being the nice guy was my whole MO. Like that was, I perfected the art of being a nice guy, and yet like I've really been thinking a lot, working on that and deconstructing what it means to be a nice guy, and realizing being a nice guy for me was actually pretty toxic. Because it means I just taxing and toxic, because I disown what I really want so that I don't upset anybody else.
Oof.
Right? Like my biggest fear is upsetting somebody else.
Right. The pleaser. I think of the golden retriever as a real pleaser type. And then we have the lion. Once we like knock on the door, what other information do we have, subconscious? They're like, guess what you need to see, Ed? Guess who's here all along? I'm wondering, so this is the next question, Ed, and I know I am kind of rushing things along, but I want you to reflect on this image again. I'd like you to make one change to this image that will make it better for the lion. What does this lion need to feel more complete? And again, go with your first reaction. What does your image need to feel more complete? And as you do that, I want to reflect to listeners, there's like so many options here. This could be like adding a piece of paper or tearing out. It could be, I've had clients like, oh, it's in the wrong environment, and they cut it out and put it somewhere else. Does it need a certain color? Does it need a shift to its environment?
You know, I think So like where I first went was drawing out more of its mane and giving it more of its mane, more of it. Like the mane for me is the presence. Like I'm here. You cannot miss me. I'm having this verbal like, rah, rah. You know, I can't, rah, rah, rah.
Yeah, Ed.
Rah.
Yes.
Oh, I just
what
hit it.
More of me. That was it?
I just hit it. Felt the resonance as I stuck with it. I just felt it just hit like a congruence nerve, if you will. And so, yeah, this is really powerful stuff.
Isn't it? And the last question is, what information has this process given you about your money? Is there any, and this is obviously speaking to more than money, right? Of course it is. And thank you for going there. Does this have any wisdom? Does this image give you any wisdom about something that needs to shift with your money?
Well, it's like I feel my whole body is arching up and open, like almost coming into that full lion pose, if you will. And it's just like, part of my struggle has been allowing myself to accumulate money. You know, I have been more comfortable with allowing my wife to accumulate money, to earn money, and like that has felt more permissible, but it hasn't felt like it's okay for me. And so I've played small and shrank away from money making opportunities. And so I think the lion for me is like, you know, here I am, here I come. Like I can go after it. And people pleasing golden retrievers coming out and saying, like, don't worry anybody, I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm not gonna hurt you. It's gonna be okay. Right. Don't be scared of the lion. But like, you know, like the lion energy of like just like having my own sense of confidence and presence and knowing like I will be heard.
And I'm struck with this also idea of like more mane, like literally take up more space.
Yeah. 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 Big time.
Thank you so much for going there.
This has been so great. And we joked about, well, we'll have to have you back for another episode because we can, what was the phrase you said? From the jaw, I think, or something like that.
What is it? Jaw wag. No, chin wag. Chin wag.
Chin wag. Chin wag, yes. And like, this is far from chin wag, and this has been quite purposeful, and I would be honored to have you back. But in the meantime, if people are listening to this and they're saying, you know, I'm really interested in this, they had whatever animal came up and they're kind of trying to track along with this, but obviously working directly with you would be even more evocative. How can people connect with you and your work? And can you tell people a little bit about what's the Money Healing Club? What is that all about?
So the Money Healing Club is really hone in on my elevator pitch for it, but it is an online support group, global, anyone can join. And we run live events. Right now we have 2 live events a week. And myself and other mentor members guide whoever shows up to the live events through different activities related to money. Once a month, I always do an art therapy guided exercise like this one. But then we like to alternate. We also have a book club going about different money topics. We also, I like to just present on debt strategies. So I'm trying to bridge the emotional and the practical.
Yes.
And then we have an online discussion along with that. And it's going to continue to grow. Hopefully we'll have a course in there. It just started in 2023. So it's still really growing. We have a very active but small membership, and it's something really, truly special. Really for people who know that their issues with money are very emotional. And also people who kind of like that therapeutic process. I mean, it's not therapy, but it's definitely got the therapy vibes. And that like this process is not linear. It's a process of having relationships with other people who are struggling, that you don't feel alone. And sometimes thinking about money in really creative ways, like this exercise I just guided you through. So it is at themoneyhealingclub.com, and we would love to have you.
That's amazing. Well, Rachel, I'm so grateful for the journey of life that you are on, that our paths have crossed, and I have no doubt our paths will continue to cross. Thank you so much for your time today.
I hope so too, Ed. Thank you so much.
I invite you now to stop for 5 or 10 minutes and reflect on what you just heard. Maybe even journal about it. Give yourself the time to consider what you just heard and what it means to you. By giving yourself the time to reflect and integrate what you just heard, it will help you along your journey of learning, healing, and growing towards financial intimacy in your life. Please like and follow this podcast and share with someone that would benefit from being on the journey of financial intimacy. Wishing you healthy love and money, Ed.